Got a great show coming up for you today. Our first guest is Teresa Snow. She's a founder of Salvation Farms. It's a gleaning program that got started in the Northeast Kingdom, coordinating gleaning from farm fields, and the food goes to the food pantries. Now the Vermont Food Bank has adopted the program. We'll hear from her how that's working and how you can get involved. And in the second part of the show, we'll be talking with Tom Scazzi. He is a 27-year-old entrepreneur, the head of a company called TerraCycle, which claims to be redefining green business. He started when he dropped out of Princeton University to sell worm poop in reused plastic bottles. And he's now building a national company built on garbage. Everything, the packaging, the products, are all garbage. And, you know, unlike a lot of the local economy stuff that we like to promote on this show, he says you got to get this stuff into Walmart and the other big box stores in order to make a difference in the world. So we'll be talking with Tom Scazzi in the second half of this show. Before we get underway with Teresa Snow, I want to comment on what seems to be almost a consensus across the ideological spectrum right now, that oil prices are being driven up by speculation. If you were listening to the noontime news, you heard Jim Hightower on the left talking about that. If you were listening from 11 to 12, you heard Paul Beaudry and his guests on the right talking about that. Jack McMullen in yesterday's Burlington Free Press was saying, yes, oil prices are being driven up by speculators. He's a Republican couple-time candidate for U.S. Senate. Bernie Sanders, independent socialist U.S. senator, says the same thing. So with that consensus across the ideological spectrum, it's got to be true, right? Well, tain't necessarily the case. I'm working on an article on this subject. I wrote about it a couple times last year, and it's a data-driven article. I'm keeping an open mind about what's happening right now, and I'm trying to gather more data. It's surprisingly difficult to find up-to-date global data on oil production. That's not so hard. But oil demand, you know, if you're looking at supply and demand to find out whether they're driving prices, then you got to be looking at global oil demand to see what that is. And that's hard to find up-to-date data on what's happening in terms of storage of oil. So I'm gathering those data, trying to put together a story of what's happening now, and I'll tell you next week what I've concluded. But last year is very clear that world oil demand exceeded supply, not, you know, during a week, not during a month, but over a several-year period. There were stocks being drawn down in 2007, in 2008, and that means that there was more oil being burned up than was being produced over that period. Now, what does that mean about speculations? Well, speculators can raise or lower oil demand a little bit at the margins and thereby affect the price at the margin. And if stocks were being drawn down last year and in 2007, which is also a year of dramatically increasing oil prices, what that means is that the speculators were helping to buffer the run-up in the price. If supply and demand had been allowed to run their course without these previously stockpiled supplies of oil to be drawn down on, then the price run-up would have been even higher. We might have seen not just $147 a barrel oil, we might have seen $200 a barrel oil last year. And yet, some of the same people who are screaming now that speculators are causing the price of oil to rise above $70 a barrel were screaming last year when exactly the opposite thing was happening in the market, that that storage was going down, that speculators were causing the rise. I'm not sure what their theory is about why the price of oil collapsed and how the evil speculators caused that to happen. Anyway, before you buy someone telling you that speculators are driving up the oil prices, ask them, what's the global supply right now? What's the demand? What are the trends in that? What's the trends in storage? Most people write about this, they don't bother to mention that. I don't know if they don't know that or what. I think the price of admission to the conversation on oil prices right now and their causes is knowing what global supply, global demand, and storage rates are. So, update on that next week. Now we'll go to Teresa Snow, who, as I said in the intro, is a founder of Salvation Farms, which is now a program of the Vermont Food Bank. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good to have you on. So For our listeners who aren't familiar with Salvation Farms, let's just go through the basics. When you founded it, how you got started, and how you became part of the food bank.
Great. I started Salvation Farms officially in 2005 from a side project that I began at Pete's Greens and Craftsbury, where I was salvaging surplus produce from his farm and distributing it to some local sites, as well as to the Vermont Food Bank. In 2005, I brought on a co-founder, Jen O'Donnell, who was working on her senior thesis at Sterling College, who helped me found Salvation Farms and make it into a nonprofit project, which was working under the nonprofit status of NOFA Vermont, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And for the next 3 years, Jen and I oversaw the gleaning, which was the salvaging of surplus product from farms in the Lamoille Valley region, and distributing that to local sites that served typically food and nutritionally insecure individuals, as well as supplying the Vermont Food Bank with a large amount of that product. And in the beginning of 2008, it was actually the end of January, I became an employee with the Vermont Food Bank, took the position of Program Director of Agricultural Resources, and Salvation Farms became their gleaning program.
Okay, and how's it gone as being part of the food bank? How has it changed what Salvation Farms has done?
Well, it has really secured the foundation of the gleaning work that was established in the Lamoille Valley. We have someone who replaced my work there. Rebecca Beidler is the gleaning coordinator for that region. And it, by securing that region's gleaning, we've been able to focus on how to strategically expand our gleaning around the state. We have hired someone to coordinate gleaning in the greater Montpelier region. We've hired someone to coordinate gleaning in the greater Brattleboro region, both of which are associated with our facilities. We have facilities in Lamoille Valley, in Barrie, as well as in Brattleboro. And in Brattleboro, we've been able to move pretty easily into that community through a partnership with Post Oil Solutions through part of their food security initiatives. And we've also partnered with the Burlington's Intervale Center and their gleaning project, which has been part of their Healthy Cities program. So we're out there gleaning, you know, kind of across the state in major populated areas or high density farming areas, and you know, we're looking at how much more we want to expand. I think we're at this point we're being quite cautious about where to expand next, and at this point, let's see that where we're at is successful and you know, showing benefit to the network partners of the food bank and the farms that we're serving in those areas before we look to other regions around the state.
So what does gleaning look like? Give us an example. You show up at 8 a.m. on some local farm to glean spinach late in June. What happens?
Well, we can either have a very loose arrangement with farms, or we can have a very regular arrangement, formal arrangement with farms. So if, let's say, we're going to a farm to pick spinach, it may be a farm that we go to every week, and our gleaning coordinator will send out an announcement to all of the volunteers that they have on file, and they will meet at a specific location at a specific time, and everybody signs in and makes sure all their paperwork's done, and you just harvest what is there as surplus.
You need to do paperwork to glean?
Well, you kind of do. With volunteers, there's different liability, and we want to keep track of how many volunteers we have, how much time they invest. All of that's really helpful for grant writing, certainly.
Okay. Okay.
But to know the level of involvement that we have around some of our programs.
Okay, so you sign the papers, and then you go out into the fields.
You get right into the field, and it's hard to get everyone in the mindset of doing any paperwork because they're there, they're ready to work, and they want to get into the field. And so you basically pick until you've picked everything that's available. Or with greens, it's a good example, is that you want to get there early while it's still the cool part of the day, while there's still dew on the greens.
They're still nice and crisp.
Exactly. Once you hit 10 to 11, all of that dew's burnt off, and then the moisture starts getting sucked out of those leaves, so that might call the end of your glean. You may also, and this is where our gleaning coordinators are, their skill is highly valued, is that they can say, well, can our network absorb this? And perishables are extremely, you need to be pretty sensitive with them as far as your turnover time. So knowing how many crops you have, what the volume is, and where it's going to go to in the next week, all really guides a field coordinator, a gleaning coordinator, on how much spinach do we want to take. We don't always clear it all, but that's also the great part of being within the Vermont Food Bank, is that if it can't be distributed in that local region, it can always be absorbed into distribution throughout the entire state. We serve about 270 different agencies around the state, and that's a lot of sites that serve a lot of Vermonters.
And with the spinach coming fresh to the food bank from the farm that very morning, then I expect you have a little bit more time window to get it distributed throughout the state than if you had gotten stuff donated from a shipment from California or somewhere.
Yeah, you do. Yep, you do. You certainly do. And especially if it's picked with quality in mind and it's handled properly, it certainly has a little bit more life, shelf life, than something that's been picked and possibly been on a store shelf already and then rescued, and then we need to figure out where that product goes.
This is Equal Time Radio on WDEV. I'm Carl Etnayer. Our guest today is Teresa Snow. She's part of the Salvation Farms program, founded Salvation Farms program a number of years ago. It's now part of the Vermont Food Bank. If you'd like to ask her a question about gleaning, give us a call, 244-1777, or tell us a story of gleaning yourself. Our toll-free number is 877-291-8255. So let's go back to the spinach field. What's happened ahead of time? Has there been mechanical harvest of the spinach? Has there been human harvest of the spinach? What's happened to leave things that need to be gleaned?
Right. Well, that's a great question. It could just be surplus.
Okay.
It could be already, like you said, mechanically harvested or hand harvested. Farmers, especially with a product like spinach, will plant succession. So that's planting every week or every 2 weeks to ensure that they always have the right quality and right quantity of certain products. So a bed of spinach may have been already cut once to, three or more times, depending on the scale of a farm.
Mm-hmm.
A bed of spinach may not even have been cut because it may have come through, maybe been damaged by hail, might have been affected by pest. It may not look as good as the next round that's coming or another bed down the way. So it could be the first cut that we're gleaning because it's not a quality, a cosmetic quality suitable for consumer or first or the market.
Okay.
But oftentimes it's been cut and farmers are moving on to their next planting.
So the spinach or whatever the vegetable is, it's not of cosmetic quality. Is that something you find in the field, or do you get that after the farmers have cut it and then sort it out before they take their food to the market?
Right. That's another great question. We'll find that both in the field, but we also work with farmers to salvage things from their wash or pack houses. So farmers often with things like cucumbers and summer squash will have their employees go through the field and just pick everything that's ready. They don't cull it, sort out the unmarketables. They don't cull it in the field, and they'll wait till they get it inside, and then they're packing it into boxes that they say, oh, that one doesn't look so great. That one has a scar. That one's growing funny. And then they'll sort them aside and put them in typically totes that we will supply them with. And then we go to the farm and pick up that product.
Hmm. Now, your colleague at the food bank, David Thurlow, was on WDEV a week and a half ago or so, I believe, on the Mark Johnson Show.
Excellent.
And he was talking about the dilemma that the food bank has faced in that as they've gotten better at taking the dented cans and things like that and making good use of those, giving them to people who need them, then the market has responded and said, hey, we can make a buck off of these dented cans. And also people have gotten better at controlling inventory and things like that, so that there's not as much food coming into the food bank this way. I'm wondering, I mean, Salvation Farms, the gleaning program, it's only been around for 5 years or so in Vermont, but are you seeing that the market is responding and saying, hey, you know, the food bank is getting this food that we could be making a buck off of, and your gleaning possibilities are starting to decline?
I don't see that as of yet. I think that if we increase the infrastructure in our state for value added and processing, then products that aren't first quality have a second market.
Right.
But as a lot of our vegetable farmers are marketing the raw product, they need prime quality.
Mm.
And I think that that your statement about kind of quoting David Thurlow on the traditionally food banks have been about rescuing food, and in doing so, the food industry has realized what kind of surpluses they're creating and have kind of refined their procedures and processes so that they're not producing such a surplus. And we are finding a shortage of available food out there across the country. So I think gleaning is a great remedy for that, in that when we don't have food processors in state yet, at least not at a large scale, it is our farmers who are producing a majority of the food that would be generating surplus in state for us to garner as donations.
And just because of the vagaries of biological systems, it's a lot more difficult for farmers to tighten their operations and say, okay, we're going to produce exactly as much food as the market needs this year.
Yeah, and you can never tell. And as I alluded to earlier, is that farmers want to produce enough to fill all of the demand, and so they often overproduce, or they want to produce enough so that if something were to happen to a portion of their crop, they still have enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Teresa Snow, director of the Salvation Farms Gleaning Program at the Vermont Food Bank. Before we go any further, let's get out information to our listeners about how they can get involved in this program. If they want to show up early in the morning and be a pair of hands to glean some food from some spinach from a field, for example.
Great. I'm not quite sure your listening range, so I'm going to... Northern half of Vermont, great. Well, for anyone interested in volunteering with the Vermont Food Bank, you can contact Patrick Gilbert. He's our volunteer coordinator for the entire organization for all of our facilities and programs. His direct line is 802-477-4127.
That's 477-4127, Patrick Gilbert.
Yeah. For our Montpelier area gleaning coordinator, if you live in the greater Montpelier area.
Let's just go with a one name for now, just to make it easier, and also a website.
That's great. Vermont Food Bank. That's www.vtfoodbank.org.
vtfoodbank.org. And apologies to our listeners in Quebec, New York, and New Hampshire. We do get off into those areas as well, but I just didn't mention them because I figured they're going to be less likely to come to fields in Vermont and do some gleaning. Right. But certainly they'd be welcome to come over the border if they wanted to.
Yes, certainly.
Okay, so how much food do you glean each year? And I realize this is really the first year, 2009 is the first year that you've really gone statewide, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so last year, say 2008, realizing the program was much smaller, how much food did you glean?
Last year we were able to bring in 160,000 pounds gleaned and donated. So that was food that was set aside, not necessarily gleaned physically from the field, but a total of 160,000 pounds. Prior to that, between the years of 2005 to 2007, before joining the food bank, Salvation Farms had only been able to glean 88,000 pounds in the Lamoille Valley. So it was a substantial jump in the first year.
Right, almost doubling.
Yeah.
And then put that in context for us, please. How much food does the food bank distribute each year?
Well, last year we distributed roughly 7 million pounds of food.
Okay, so we got a ways to go before gleaning will cover even half of that.
We certainly do, yep.
Mm. And also, I just wanted to put in a plug. You talked about donated food. The food bank at their place in Barrie will accept donations of food from people who've planted an extra row or for whatever reason have extra food, correct?
Yes, and all of our facilities, the Wolcott, the Brattleboro, the Barrie, Branch certainly will be willing to take any food donated, whether it's perishable or shelf-stable. Mm. And we also encourage for home gardeners, there's the Grow an Extra Row program. They could make or build a relationship directly with their local food pantry, too, to increase that efficiency and support their community in that way.
And the food pantries, you can find them through the Vermont Food Bank website, if
exactly.
I remember correctly. And
yep.
That's
yep.
vtfoodbank.org, and I expect Patrick Gilbert would be willing to help you out if you don't have web access.
Yes.
That's 477-4127 to talk to Patrick Gilbert, the volunteer coordinator at the Vermont Food Bank.
Great.
And then farmers markets are another source of food for the food bank, correct?
Yeah, we do some gleaning at farmers markets, again, where those field coordinators are located. And I think that's a good service to farms in that there's some product that farmers will take to farmers markets that they can return to the farm with and incorporate into a farm stand or into another market. But then there's also a lot of food that they don't really want to take back to the farm because it'll just have to go into the compost pile. So that food we can glean and then make great diverse kind of mixed boxes and then distribute those in that region.
Hmm. And Teresa Snow, what would you say is the potential for gleaning in Vermont?
Oh, I think it's huge. I think that if we have the volunteer support to make the work that we do, purchasing field trucks, hiring field gleaning coordinators, the cold storage, and equipping our in-house employees and workers the ability to care for this product and turn it over, and as well as the network partners infrastructure for them to turn it over and have this product in good quality to be received. I think increasing the efficiency, increasing the labor on fields through volunteers, we can serve more farms in a way that farms are satisfied and are going to be proud to participate and want to have us return to their fields.
Do you think you've reached 10% of the potential now?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. At 160,000 pounds per year, you haven't reached 10% of the potential.
So I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
That's a lot of potential out there.
I think there is a lot of potential, and we're seeing small farms, not so small farms, but small and U.S. scale farms that are increasingly diversified become more and more aggressive and efficient food producers. And by growing products when you're trying to market the best quality, you're going to have surplus. And we need to make this easy for farms. If it's not easy for them, then it's easier just to till it in, which is good for the soil, but there's many people that could be eating some really healthy food.
Absolutely. Well, Amanda Payne is a Central Vermont field representative. I'm on her email list, and she says that tomorrow, if you're in the East Montpelier or Plainfield area or want to get there at 8 a.m., there's a small spinach glean And that's at 8 a.m., only 5 boxes, so only 1 or 2 volunteers needed for an hour. So let her know or contact Peter Gilbert, since we've been giving out his phone number, 477-4127, if you'd like to be a part of that. And I'll put in a plug. There's another small, not really a glean, but a harvest. As many listeners know, Vermont is the first state in the nation to have planted a vegetable garden on the State House lawn. And the food from that vegetable garden is going to the Montpelier Food Pantry. The first harvest of that will be tomorrow at 8 a.m. The lettuce, which was grown originally in plugs by the students at the Montpelier High School in their greenhouse, will be harvested and taken to the food pantry. So if you'd like to be a part of that, show up at the State House at 8 a.m.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, I was part of the group that put that together, and we're really proud that we've gotten to this point. And the plants look fantastic there. We've got some nice Vermont Compost Company compost there, good soil from years of good treatment, and I don't know, maybe just some good feeling from the peoples of Vermont. It's a people's lawn there outside the people's house, and
right. The
plants have been doing very well.
Right, to feed the people.
That's right.
Noble cause.
Well, we're almost out of time here. Teresa Snow, Director of Salvation Farms at the Vermont Food Bank. Anything you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I certainly appreciate the time you've taken to have me on, and I'd encourage anyone that wants to come out and help the Vermont Food Bank reach its mission. You're very welcome to do so, whether that's at one of our facilities or in the field. We can always use an extra set of hands to help out your neighbors who can't meet their food needs.
Very good. Thank you for your important work, Teresa Snow.
Great. Thank you, too, Carl.
And one more time, Patrick Gilbert is the volunteer coordinator for the Vermont Food Bank. His phone number is 477-4127. And you can find out all about the volunteer opportunities, including the gleaning opportunities, available through the Vermont Food Bank at their website. That's vtfoodbank.org. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Tom Scazzi. He's the author of a book called Revolution in a Bottle. It's about how he started selling worm poop in reused plastic bottles when he dropped out of Princeton University, not even 10 years ago. And he's building a national company that is founded on selling garbage to people, literally. We'll hear from Tom Scazzi in just a moment.